The Grow My Cleaning Company podcast helps owners of cleaning companies just like you to grow your company and yourself so you can make more money and finally get the time and money freedom that probably got you into this business. Discover how to automate and create systems that allow you to grow like crazy without losing control. If you dig the show and want to show some love, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. It really helps. Enjoy the show.
All right, question. How long do you think we have before humanoid robots replace our cleaning business? This is not a joke. Really good question. I believe it or not, I think about existential threats like that because I feel like that's my job. So oddly enough, if you'd asked me that 10 years ago, I would have thought we'd start at blue collar and work our way up to white collar. Like this would be the first to go. And then like high-end IP lawyers would be the last. I'm finding that to be turned on its head. I think the way that technology is going, intellectual jobs, or like my job is more at risk than your job. We've always done this anyway, but part of like, we got to build relationships, right? Because that's really all we can do is have relationships and really contextualize to your very specific thing. So how long? I couldn't tell you, brother. I wish, but I would say we have more than a decade. And I think so much disruption will happen to the non-blue collar work first. And that's going to take a minute to shake out that we'll have, it won't be anything that we don't see coming. Right. Exception would be drivers. I think those are out pretty quickly, but all non-driving blue collar work, I think AI is going to take over that pretty quick, but non-blue collar, like physically. And I think they've got robots that can do a lot of stuff now, but they're very, you know how it takes before there's like, you know, in 1979, there was a cell phone that weighed as much as your house. And for $100 a minute, you could call someone and that phone was 27 grand. And then sometime around, you know, 97, like everyone had one or two that whenever that happened, but it was 30 years in the coming and we saw it for a long time. So that said, the other piece of that, and again, I wish I could tell you I'm some expert on the future, but I am not. So we'll record this and look back in 20 years and look how silly Mike sounded. That said, the flip side of that is also needs to be taken into consideration, because for us to be, when I say us, I mean owners of cleaning companies or the cleaning service as a concept to be replaced, I believe you'll need two things: machines that can do the cleaning job, and probably at that point, machines will be making those machines, right? So machines will pretty much be able to do all the white collar stuff will have been handled. So I'll have been out of a job many moons ago. And now we're kind of getting down to the, like, and this is also very tactile, hard to do, like flipping, but I think there's other, they'll come for other blue collar jobs, like mining, just less like I need fingers and a little bit of brains. Like I think we'll be at the last. Then it's like, well, if machines can make machines and machines can pretty much do everything, energy is the one thing that we got to get sorted, because if there's not enough energy, that would be the problem. But if we've got plenty of energy, I don't think anyone will have a job. And now I'll have a real existential, they call it there's a name for it. The singularity, where it's like, okay, now what? Nobody has a job, but nobody needs a job because houses are free, because machines can make machines and machines can make houses, and to get the materials out of the ground and transform, that's all machines, and all machines can make machines. So now you get into much more philosophical, like, what does the world look like? Is it, so I guess the short answer I've allow myself to sleep with and believe is going to be the case will be, there'll be such a disruption. Other things, our industry will be such a small, A, it's going to be at the end of that tale from my perspective, and B, so many other positive and negative things will happen. It'll almost be a moot point of like, not just what we do, is like, what does anybody do? Right. Like it'll be, you know, if really energy at that point, I think will be the commodity, because if you have machines that can do everything and all that the machines require is energy, energy is going to be the one, you know, and you know, they've got the slow fusion fission thing. So I don't know if that's a satisfying answer, but when you're saying, tell me about the future, I can only give you opinions and hope, no experience firsthand. Questions, comments, or remarks before I move on?
No, you can just tell that that's my vacation brain question.
It's a great vacation brain question. And that's one of the things I have thoughts and I definitely research and study, but I'm open to opinions. Like again, most stuff I coach, if not everything, is here's what I've done. This is fairly definitively accurate and will get you the way you want to go. When it's something outside of my area of expertise, I will always give my perspective, but I'm always defer to someone smarter than me. So if any of you guys are like, I've done the research, I know what's going to, you know, I've got more feedback, I'm always open to hear it. So, great question, Marty. Thanks. I don't think it was a satisfying answer, but I appreciate the question.
Yeah, no, I actually really appreciate your take on it. I completely agree with you as far as large language learning models taking blue collar or white collar workers' jobs, like paralegals and maybe even attorneys for 80% of what we deal with might be out of a job in less than 2 years or something. But definitely like data entry, data management, data analyzing, like all of that might go away awfully quickly. Where it's fascinating to me is that OpenAI just applied their ChatGPT-4 to an actual humanoid robot, and you can literally ask it questions. It looks around, understands its context, and hands you an apple because you say, "Can I eat something?"
That's crazy.
And so the next thing, it's so funny. Every video I see of humanoid robots being developed right now, especially out of China, they're actually literally aiming to mass manufacture them by end of 2024, is they show robots in factories, and the very next thing they show is robots cleaning. And I swear it's just, that's what humans want, is they want a robot to be able to like do their laundry and do their cleaning. And so it does worry me, but I'm just trying to keep my finger on a pulse of something that's probably a lesser threat than, our own internal problems. I should probably go out and sell more.
For today, you should definitely go out and sell more. But even long term, then it just becomes, now we're managing capital and non-human resources as opposed to resources. They still, maybe people have their own humanoid. You know, Elon's working on his, you know, Optimus guy, but I don't know how much cleaning he'll be able to do. Now you become Uber as a taxi company. It's a little, it's just That said, I'll give two other quick things. One, I think with AI in general, we're going to be moving more towards, I don't think the AI is going to be able to do it. It still makes glaring, awful mistakes. I think it's just going to be able to leverage it. So as opposed to me as an attorney having to draft it, AI will draft it and do a lot of the work. I'll just have to edit it and proofread it. So it really will just expand my ability to do stuff. I think it's going to be a long time being a decade or more before AI replaces a lot of thinking work. It'll just be, again, same thing. If I use it for copy or a headline, it's really to get an idea, but I'm going to contextualize it. That's first. Second, I don't know if this is going to play out here, but being an old guy with the internet, you know, we had that whole .com burst in 2000 and we're like, everyone's going to buy everything online. We'll never go to a store again. And that's 20 years ago. And I feel like everything's done online shopping, and it's still less than that. You know, it's still not overtaken. So I think these things happen a lot more slowly than we think. Like it makes a huge jump. Like ChatGPT, I think, will definitely be looked back at, like when the internet first was born. I was like, oh my God, look at all this thing. And it's probably gonna take 20 years before it can actually work out the kinks and be like, yeah, we are actually, look at self-driving cars, right? How long have those been around? And they're still like that last mile is a tough one. So anyway.
Yeah, now they're
go ahead.
Now they're bailing on them.
Yeah, it's All right. Excellent question. Fun discussion. But yeah, the right answer for today is go out and sell some more crap. But long term, it's a really good conversation to consider. Real quick, Cleaning Nation, if you can think about how you found out about this podcast, maybe a tweet, a Facebook message, iTunes search, some sort of Instagram post, the only way we grow is word of mouth. We don't do paid ads. We don't run ads. You are it. The only ask I have is if you're getting value, share the love. However you found out about this, if it's a review or post, whatever it is, do that. Pay it forward so the next cleaning company owner can change their life as well. Back to the show. Okay, question. One, should I always be doing the working interview? No, I feel like I should. How do I get my staff to do the working interview? How do I get myself to do all the interviews? These are like dumb questions, not dumb questions. So anything that requires you for the business to run means you cannot run it from anywhere in the world. So if you have to do the working interviews, that means no one, all the hiring stops when you, God forbid, take a vacation, which is unacceptable. So I personally, when I'm in town, I like that part, building the culture and getting to spend time with my people. I love, even still, I'm probably going to pick one of the three steps that week to participate in. So I'm going to vary. I don't want to always be doing the working or the one-on-one or the group. I'll probably take one a week while I'm in town. And if I'm in town, that just goes that. In terms of getting the staff to do it, I would reframe that or put another context around it in that when you've got the right people and you set the right, perfect example, these events that we do is a bunch of work for Lindsay. I've never had to be like, how do I get her to do that? Like, she's the right person. She loves helping out. So she loves doing it. She loves making money for you guys, for her, for the company. So she loves doing it. She's super real. So she hated it, or she was overwhelmed, or I was being unreasonable. She would tell me and have fun and make money. Oh, and it's a blast. We have a ton of fun doing it. So I don't ever have to get her to do anything. Like, we all agree this is what's best and she loves doing her part, and that's that. So frankly, even if I'm not a core values fit and I don't give a crap about you and your company, if you're like, you make 18 bucks an hour, you can get on your hands and knees and clean that toilet, or you can help someone else, you know, you can train someone or teach someone and share some of your value and be valued for your brains, not just your back. That would be my preference. Or you can sit in a nice coffee shop with some sugar and coffee that's been purchased for you and pick who you get to pick on the team. So properly set up, I think they should be wanting to do that. Like, oh, I'm super excited to grow in my abilities. It should never be a push pull. Did they answer that question before I move on to that next one?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Two, what's a good way to consistently get my clients to give Google reviews without effort on my part? How can I get them to post reviews on social for the subdivision without effort on my part? I don't know how to do anything without effort. It doesn't have to be ongoing effort, but it can be effort that you set something right up. And
that's what I mean.
Yeah. So I'll be honest with you. This is one of the things I'm weak at. So I'm going to give you a wildly unsatisfying answer and leave it to the in the chat, just so it's not all chaos. Leave it to the group to share their experience. You guys are just the best. Like, I really, really appreciate you guys are all amazing when it comes to reviews. Like, we never ask for them. We don't do anything. And you guys just step up and give the most. And by the way, I personally respond to every one of those things. So when you see a response that is not Lindsay or that's not Apple, that is me. So really appreciate you guys. That said, I'm pretty shitty at getting reviews because we just do our best to really love on our clients to make them feel appreciated and loved and cared. And we do. It's not like it's some sort of scam to be like, let's make John think we like it. Like, we really do care about you guys. And you are amazing. So, and every company I've had has been that way. We've just let it happen, which is not helpful to you guys, but I don't want to, everything we coach is crap I've done. So I don't want to be like, here's a system on a book that I read, or, you know, I don't know. Claire says customer happiness manager would be the person in charge of that. And if you don't have that yet, then you're the customer happiness manager.
Yeah.
So big asterisk, everything I coach is crap I've done, both good and bad. So I can tell you from experience. If I woke up in your shoes, I'll tell you what I would do, but this isn't something I've had experience in because we just naturally got good reviews. I would, instead of trying to get good reviews, figure out a way to surprise and delight my customers so they wanted to give good, like with you guys, we do our best to just be with you and care about you. And hopefully, you know, you can leave having a good or bad experience, but it would be heartbreaking if you left going, they didn't really give a shit. They just took my money. So I would find a way to surprise and delight and make your clients feel extra special. There's all sorts of software and systems and processes to call, but I have found in my experience, asking people that you give an adequate service to give reviews is a lot harder and less fruitful than just surprising and delighting people and letting them just give really good reviews on their own. You can tell, right? Like, that's my favorite thing about the reviews we get, especially, and this is all you guys, I'm not taking credit. You guys are amazing. It's not just like, and hey, we'll get a couple, just 5 stars, love Mike and the team, and we'll take them. That's great. But they're usually like very, like, I really appreciate Apple and Suzanne did this, and like really just sweet, sweet things. So the easiest way, if I'm you, I'm like, the next question is like, great, how do I surprise and delight then, jerk? Always having your systems that you're going to do A, B, C, and D, and only tell them about A, B, and C, right? So we have built in, like, when you guys join our program, we send a gift. We don't, we ask you your shirt size, which kind of gives it away. But at Next Level, we have that stuff. So we just send it to you. We try to do our best if someone's going through something tough to send you guys a gift and let you know that we love you, or just reach out to you personally. Or when someone has a win, we celebrate with you. And we don't tell you, like, as we're signing you up, just so you know, 2 emergency negatives per year, we will send a gift. The budget's usually 86 to 4, you know, 112. But like, it's just, oh my God. And it's just natural. Like, any of us will, it's usually Suzanne because she gets the most one-on-one with you guys. Like, hey, Marie's going through a, you know, or actually just traveled. We should get her welcome home gift, or someone's going through something struggle. So I would have a system and process, as opposed to get good reviews, I'd have a system and process to surprise and delight my clients. And if that didn't get me reviews, then I'd layer on top of that asking for reviews. And I think I would probably do it the way I'm doing it here, where I would make a big deal when people, like I do my best when you guys leave reviews to, on that call, be like, thank you, Caitlin. Like, I know Caitlin's left me a review. Thank you so much. You're so sweet. And I'll use, cause I've read the review and I personally responded to it. Just let her know in front of everybody. So as opposed to, you know, going, hey, Adon, where's my review? And I can't even find the one that hasn't given a review. So I'm just completely making it up. Adon, give me a review. One energy. But when Adon's on the call, I'm like, Caitlin, you are so sweet. You have no idea how much I appreciate. And just not me, but the team. We all read them. It makes all of our day. Thank you. That's much more likely to get Adon. And I don't, by the way, I do that because I really am thankful to Caitlin. A side benefit is Adon is going to have more of like, well, I want to do that. I've had a good experience. And like, he just wants to do that. So I would surprise and delight first, really make a big deal. And I know you don't have weekly Zoom meetings, but over email, over any communication, brag on your clients and just be so thankful out loud and proud when you get reviews in front of other clients. And if that didn't work, I was surprising and delighting. I was making a big stink and really appreciating the people that gave reviews. Then I would do some sort of systematized software, email, or customer happiness manager in that order. So probably not a fulfilling answer, but I can only coach off what I actually have done and do.
Okay.
Okay. Three, what's the optimal way to quality control? What should that process look like? Exactly what we teach you, man. Customer happiness manager calls them periodically. Every team should be checking at least one job once a week and giving a review. So you get the, ideally there's some sort of either virtual or digital or paper checklist that every team uses and goes through before they leave their account, and they turn it in either physically or electronically. And then once a week, every team checks at least one job, and then you get the review or the quality control checklist. And then the guy checking its checklist, and when they match, it's a pretty good indicator of what happened. When they don't match, that's when I, as a customer happiness manager, would probably go out and just check on that. And you can just call the client. You don't have to go out for residential. For commercial, I go check it myself. For residential, I might call the client and just be like, hey, we had your thing checked. How did it go? What's going on? So a combination of people checking each other, the customer happiness manager checking the checks, comparing what the team that did the clean said compared with what the review said, and then calling your people quarterly, you know, just to maybe the weekly clients call them every month. Just checking in with your people and making sure you're doing a good job. Because believe it or not, I'm not as interested in the actual quality. I'm interested in my customers being happy. So if I do what I think is the best clean, but Capri's not happy, I'd rather do what I think is an average clean and Capri love me. So I weigh a lot on the customer's feeling about the thing, right? So if Capri needs a little extra to feel loved, and Danny's super easy and she doesn't care, and Claire doesn't care about nothing but this one thing, I'm more into like, as opposed to, I just want to make sure everyone's feeling good. So I do a lot of more weight on client feedback than I do on metrics of me going, this is clean to my standard because it's not my house. Does that make sense?
Right. Okay.
Well, here we are, the end of the podcast, and you made it. Great job. I've got a little bonus for you before for sticking through with me. But like I mentioned before, if you got value out of this podcast and you want to show a little love, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever the heck you're listening to this thing. Share with a friend. Share the love. And as a special thank you for those of you that stuck with me to the end, how about I give you my personal phone number so we can text? It's a great way for me to get to know you, your business, your goals personally. So shoot me a text now, 602-932-6431. That's 602-932-6431. I am the only one who responds to these texts, and I will personally respond to everyone I possibly can as long as this number is manned. Don't know how long we're going to keep this at the end of the podcast, so grab it now, 602-932-6431. Give me a text, say hey, can't wait to meet you.